an audio test. Hi, Joseph. Can you confirm if the line is clear? Test mic 1, 2, 3.
Test 1, 2, 3. Test 1, 2.
Test mic 1, 2, 3. Hi, Joseph. Can you hear me?
Okay. Please, NCG member, come sit on the table.
Test
we will
one,
start
two,
soon.
Test 1, 2, 3.
Just audio test 1, 2. Audio test 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Audio test 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Audio test 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
I can hear you now.
Okay.
Test 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Audio tech. Test 1, 2, 3.
Great. Thank you very much.
I'll join this line now into the conference.
Everyone, we will start in 1 minute. So please take your seat. Okay. It's time to start. I think. Thank you, everyone, for coming to the non-commercial stakeholder group meeting today. Sorry for the delay. Our room was occupied by the board, and we had to ask them to leave quickly. And I want to welcome those who joined us today. So we have this session in every ICANN meeting, and we try to go through several topics in the agenda to have and also to introduce what NCSG is doing and what are the topics of interest we have. In terms of agenda, we will start first to get maybe some updates and reports from constituency, NCSC and NPOC. I made a small amendment. I invited the ICANN Chief Compliance Officer, but he will come at 4 p.m. So I think we will start first to discuss about ICANN accountability to get some updates from those involved in the cross-community working group. Farzana also will do some report about some work we are trying to do about the DIDP. And at 3:10, the co-chairs of the CCWG, they are coming here and looking to listen from us. We want, and if we want to tell them something, so I hope that you are okay. And yes, we had also as a topic a kind of update about human rights activities that will be done by Niels. We can start with that after getting the reports from the constituency. Yes, and we have any other business later. So it's quite basic agenda. And I think we can start with the first item, which is an update from the agency about their morning session. It should not be take more than 5 or 10 minutes. I don't see Bill here, so I'm not sure who will do the report for NCUC, but we can start with NPOC, and I see Rudy.
Rafik, Rudy Vansnik for the transcript, chair of NPOC. We started our session at 9:30, like usually, and we started with welcoming new members to NPOC. We discussed a little bit the issues of how they can get involved, be active in working groups, and then we went over to the presentation by the co-chairs, and it was the co-chair Leon Sanchez from the cross-community working group accountability, who gave us a very good view on where they are today, what are the issues that are still not resolved, and what input we eventually could give to them. It was a very interesting session. Normally we would have had Paddy joining us after that session, but I see we were not having the room at time because the board and the CEO had very intensive discussions and didn't allow him to come to our meeting. He came at the very end. Meanwhile, we have been discussing the concerns that our community has related to the GTLD, especially certain specific TLDs where we discovered and recently, while we were trying to validate a new member, we discovered again that issue that quite often an organization, not for profit, has registered a .org domain name, and after a few years, very often they are losing their domain name because, first of all, they didn't know that they had to renew. That's a first issue. Second issue that we have seen and is happening more and more is that the domain name is captured by a commercial corporation, which goes against the idea and the trust factor of a .org being dedicated especially to the to organizations and NGOs. So this is really a big issue, as they are losing all the investments they have been doing. And even in our case, it was an applicant for NPOC, that we had to first look into why they mentioned their .org domain name while it is in hands of a corporation. And it was an organization from Pakistan. So this is really something we need to go more in depth in it and look into how we could eventually look into enforcement of certain procedures to avoid that certain registrars are capturing or allowing to and not validating the real registrant behind it. So I think that's something that will be for Marrakesh a topic where we will try to concentrate on and invite all those that are needed to have an idea of how to address this, solve this issue. Because what we see is that there is a lack of trust now in .org, and this is seen also in the number of registrations and renewals that are going down rather than being stable or increasing. So there is an issue. And by doing that, we got a lot of input from the participants that were in the room, identifying that indeed there are these issues, but there are related elements that they most often don't know that the domain name. Most of the organizations think that they get it for life, that once you register, you get it, it's for you, you have it, and it's yours. So there is a lot of awareness work that has to be addressed, which fits in the discussions about the outreach to civil society in general. So that's a topic we addressed. And at the end, we had still the visit of Fadi, asking him what he perceives as being a mission, a task that NPOC has with regards the IANA transition. What could we do? Where could we help? What are elements that requires us to consult eventually still our community? And the last point we touched upon is the preparation for the Marrakesh meeting, that we want to plan well in advance, especially in the context of reaching out to the African region for NGOs, very critical region. We need to work a lot on this and this need. So that's where we have been focusing on at the end. And with that, I can conclude my report. I don't know if my colleagues have any other remarks or comments to add.
Thanks, Rudy. Any question? Comment? I think for NCIC, maybe Milton can do the report.
I didn't take the copy of the agenda with me, so do you have a helpful? Did anybody bring that? Is that the NCIC agenda? Yeah. So we had a very good turnout for our meeting. Lots of people, quite a few new people. We began simply by introducing these new people, and we mainly ended up talking about the accountability, the transition issues, expressing some different views about that, talking about strategy. Contrary to a lot of the other stakeholder groups, I think people, at least in our constituency, were feeling like the gravitation toward a designator model and away from a membership model was not a good thing. And we wanted to know more about the implications of this for accountability, and we decided that we really thought there should be a public comment period for the new plan, which looks like it is in fact going to happen. And we got to continue our discussion of the accountability issue when we were visited by Assistant Secretary of Commerce Larry Strickling and his assistant Fiona Alexander. And we got to ask them direct questions about the transition. In particular, we asked them about the process of getting the transition through Congress. We tried to draw him out about his opinions of the different models. Of course, he was not too forthcoming on that. He wants to make it up to us. And we asked him about the root zone management modification, where we learned, I think, somewhat new information, namely that he thinks that the actual arrangements between ICANN and VeriSign will be after the transition, will be designed after the transition rather than during the transition. And we made it clear to him that we think that should be something subject to public input and public approval through a comment process, and he seemed to agree with that. Then, sort of following on our Sweet 16 birthday party on Sunday night, we had a discussion of our history with me and Kathy Kleiman coming in remotely, talking about the very earliest formative days. And then that led into some of the discussions of the Westlake report and our disagreement with the model that would break up the NCSG into any number of constituencies. And some of the need for administrative matters, such as the revision of our charter and bylaws going forward, possible incorporation. So that's, did I forget anything important? With anybody who was there, remember? Okay, thanks, James.
Okay, thanks, Milton. Any question or comment? Okay. So we can then move to the next agenda item, and we will go with Niels. I think we will share the. We have some slides, and we will share them in the Adobe Connect. So, Mariam, can you do that? And now let's go to Niels. Yeah.
Hello. Thank you very much for the floor, Rafik. I'll give you a very short update on ICANN's corporate and social responsibility to respect human rights. Next slide, please. We've been continuing the discussion and the work since ICANN 50, where the work on human rights really converged, even though a lot of human rights in ICANN for quite a while. But with the report of Council of Europe, it really spurred a new discussion that then continued at ICANN 51 in LA, where we had a session. Well, in Singapore, the cross-community working party on ICANN's corporate human rights was formed. We had sessions with the GAG work group on human rights and international law that was formed there as well. And we pay a report was published by Article 19. And for a slide back, please. In Buenos Aires, we also had a session and a new report. And right now, we are in ICANN 54 in Dublin. And we have a first report that is really a product of Community Working Party itself. I have printed copies. The URL is presenting that in length tomorrow at our session at 9 o'clock. Next slide. So we're doing this work, of course, because ICANN's policies and operations have the potential. Right. Next slide, please. So we have a charter which tells us that we're doing awareness raising, doing mapping of cases, and come up with plans how these risks can be created. Next slide, please. And it's good to know that different processes are ongoing. So there's the GAG Working Group on Human Rights and Internet Law. Human rights are being discussed in the cross-community working ability, especially in Working Party 4. We seem to have a consensus on human rights language, and of course in the cross-party on human rights. Next slide, please. You're all very much invited to join or follow the work. On the mailing list, the documents can be found on the website, and of course during the session tomorrow morning at 9, but at 5 would also be great if you could join, where we're going to shape the work up to the meeting in Marrakesh. So you can really volunteer, tell us what we should do, how we should approach it, so that will be a real practical session. Rafik, I don't know if you want us to give a very short rundown.
You know how I like to be that you to be brief, so you can.
Okay, so for that, I will hand over to a new face, Aizawa.
Very much. Are you able to call up? So, good afternoon, everybody. I will just quickly take you through the report, but not in a great level of detail. And before I do that, I just want to thank everybody for commenting on the report. It's been made better because of the participants. So, are you all familiar with the UN Guiding Principles on Business and Human Rights? Yes? No? So let me just take you through that very quickly. Next slide, please. And next slide. And next slide. The guiding principles were unanimously endorsed by the Human Rights Council in 2011, and today they're supported by governments, businesses, and civil society. So it's something extremely influential and authoritative. And the guidelines, as the name suggests, apply to business enterprises in all sectors and regions. So it's really become a common reference point, and particularly for the information communication technology sector. Next slide, please. So basically what the guidelines say is that governments have the responsibility to protect human rights, including protecting from business abuses of human rights. Companies have the responsibility to respect human rights, and everybody has the responsibility to make sure that there are adequate remedies. So when I often get asked, what do you mean by human rights? In this context, we mean the International Bill of Human Rights and the 8 core ILO conventions on labor standards. We can come back and discuss exactly what that means for this community. So for corporate responsibility to respect, that means the corporate entity has to carry out some kind of a due diligence process in order to avoid, prevent, or mitigate adverse human rights impacts. And that means you have to review your own activity to find out how they impact human rights, as well as reviewing your business relationship with other entities in order to find out what other entities are doing. And that's going to be tricky vis-a-vis the registries and registrars in the ICANN context. But the guiding principles also say, depending on the level of severity, you can prioritize. So we don't have to do everything all at once. Next slide, please. So why are these guiding principles relevant? Well, on the one hand, ICANN is a nonprofit organization. On the other hand, it has a lot of characteristics of a business. ICANN is extremely influential in a business relationship and can influence internet content. It definitely influences businesses in many ways. And because the UNGPs are widely recognized as relevant, also in the information communication technology sector, we think that this is an authoritative source, particularly for dealing with issues like privacy and data issues. Next slide, please. So this sounds terribly overwhelming, but what I want to say is that there is a lot of energy within ICANN to tackle a lot of governance issues, and human rights can definitely be understood as one of the governance issues that ICANN should be open to. And what we suggest is that we should build on the current momentum. Yeah, and to take this momentum into the next step and the next step in a measured but consistent approach. And so what this might mean in the immediate future is to figure out what the human rights issues are in connection with the policy development process within ICANN, and also to potentially produce a report that publicly discloses what the application of a human rights lens might mean to a policy development process. There are a lot of other things ICANN can do, such as to look at the entire ICANN operations beyond policy development and to develop a human rights policy. Also carry out a very comprehensive human rights impact level. Also think about corporate social responsibility strategy and report. Regardless of what happens, our suggestion would be that this human rights conversation take place alongside ICANN's overall discussion on values and risk management, so that human rights discussion doesn't take place aside from and separate from ICANN. And with that, thank you. And we're happy to take if there's any.
Okay, thank you very much for this presentation. Let's take some question or comments to this. Yes, Rudy.
Thank you for the presentation. It's quite interesting. Although this page, on this page, the previous one, There was a sentence mentioned that ICANN influences internet content. I'm not sure how you see that. As far as I know, ICANN is not covering content. They are doing domain names, but they are not covering content. So I would like to know what you mean with influential on internet content.
Thank you very much for this presentation. This is Marilia speaking for the record. There is a question that has been emerging over and over when we are discussing the change in the bylaws, which is the limits of the responsibility that ICANN would have regards to third-party registrants, specifically regarding CCTLDs. There is a policy development process that takes place inside the umbrella of the organization that develops policy for country code top-level domains, but many of these country codes are somehow subject to national jurisdictions. And one of the questions that have been raised is that if there is a national redelegation of a CCTLD from one body to the other because the government somehow wants to have access to data of individuals that are registering domain names, or because the government wants to put in place some kind of censorship policy on the national level, would ICANN somehow be responsible for that? Would ICANN have the responsibility to deny this redelegation based on the commitments that we are introducing? Or I'm just trying to understand in which stage ICANN is not responsible anymore and how we draw these lines. I'm just asking because it's a question that may be relevant for us, not exactly now, but further down the road. Thanks.
Thank you for these both excellent questions. So to your question, Rudy, we're definitely not propagating here that ICANN, the content business. What's meant here is domain names itself can be expression. That's meant. We're not aiming to for ICANN to police sites whatsoever, and we think that ICANN should strongly stay with it. Then, Marilia, to your answer, so I don't think we have a ready answer yet. So this is definitely cases that we analyze. But if I would give an answer or reiterate on something that Motoko said earlier, do not need ICANN to protect human rights in countries. So if a company is held by that country's law, then ICANN should not. That's not something that I change of law in a specific country. That's a commitment of that ICANN should be doing. So we need to see, and I think what is very important is that there is a transparency and an understanding of what is going on in the different environments. And I think that is an obligation that ICANN can have, or that boards, is to understanding what the impacts are. And I think we should first try to make that visible, then develop proper policies for that.
Okay, thanks, Niels. So,
Maria, can I make just one comment back? Sorry.
Yes, you can make. Yes, you can make comment. Was I wanted to say that we have also Martin.
Marilia, again, for the record, just that I think maybe it would be useful, and I understand that each organization will have to draw its own lines. So I think you are absolutely correct in your answers. Maybe it would be useful for us to look at other organizations and how they have been drawing these lines. I mean, when the responsibility ceases and the third parties assume the responsibility for it. Just an imperative analysis would be good.
Thank you. This is Motoko Aizawa. That analysis is normally carried out through the process of a comprehensive human rights impact assessment in which a business entity looks at its own causing of human rights impacts, contributing to human rights impact, and creating human rights impacts through business relationships. Yeah, so there are three different tiers that are specified in the guiding principles. And so here we're talking about ICANN's contractual relationship with registrars, and we're going to have to look at, analyze that contractual relationship to figure out what kind of human rights of responsibilities could be undertaken by the registrars, which will be influenced by the country context, among other things. And so it's a fairly complicated analysis. But also, I want to stress that the guiding principles don't say if you have a problem with a business relationship, you must ditch it tomorrow. right? So you have to actually engage with that business relationship to see how you can improve it from a human rights point of view. And you also have to take the country context into account. You also have to figure out how severe the human rights impacts are, and depending on that, you can prioritize. So it's actually a very framework. And so I just want to assure everybody that it is not black and white and that a lot of judgments will be required. But for something like this, it would be very advisable for us to have a very comprehensive tool that lets us look at all these different scenarios and draw proper lines.
So we have Matt and then Monica.
Thanks. Matthew Shears for the record. So you know I'm very supportive of this. Let me ask a couple of questions. I know many organizations, many corporations who have not signed up to the Ruggie principles. Many of those organizations or corporations are in fast-moving consumer goods and other spaces that have a very direct impact on consumers. So what is the argument here that, and I'm asking this question because it'll be asked again, what is the argument here that should invest in looking at Ruggie principles and taking those forward? This is a question that's going to come up again and again, and I think there needs to be a very good example. I'd like to come back to Marilia's question as well, which is, I think the way that we need to look at this is to say, here are some leading class corporations that have signed up, and these are the reasons why. And here are some leading class organizations that have adopted and implemented CSR policies, and here are the reasons why. I think that needs to come first when explaining what we're doing and why we're trying to do it here. And I'm supportive, just a note of...
Okay. Thanks, Matt. Monica?
Hey, Monica Jolene-Dutte for the record. I just came out of my Next Gen session, and we had a chance to talk with a lawyer there with the ICANN legal stuff, and apparently all of our Next Gen people really wanted to know more. But what I wanted to say, because just a minute ago, Niels was saying that, yeah, we only want to look at the domain names as we don't want to look into the content, and all the time, each time we talk on these issues, each time... it seems that many people think that we are saying that ICANN should take a role of a champion of human rights or something. But what I wanted to point out is that actually we're trying to do the very opposite. Take, for example, the RAA agreement. I would say that in that situation, when the agreement was adopted, despite all the concerns, in fact, ICANN, I would say, was used by several governments to create a substantial rule, let's say anti-human rights, but whatever. But it was used with totally out of its remit. So if we say that its remit is only to do certain things, but in fact, RAA agreement is the very opposite. It establishes the substantial rules that are, I would say, illegal in Europe, at least, and perhaps many places in the world. So I would say we can even sort of market our campaign as actually putting the limits back onto ICANN's remit, because it was not the remit to create new rules for law enforcement to have access to personal data. I would say that could be a part of our strategy, to say that we're doing the very opposite rather than extending that remit. We're just trying to put the limits back.
Thanks, Monica. So first, do you want to respond? And maybe I'm checking behind me.
This thing on? Yes, it is. Stephanie Perrin, for the record, I just want to thoroughly endorse what Monica just said. The question is, strategically, how do we do that? I would suggest that the earlier we point out that part of this initiative is to draw that bright line between content and carriage, faster we will stop having our potential supporters being picked off on these grounds. Because I would say that some parties have legitimate fears that this will open up another way to intrude into content. And I think it's a real risk that we should address early on. Thanks.
So this is Motoko Aizawa. Coming back to Matthew's question, I would say for for-profit companies, what drive them to adopt the Ruggie principles are, first of all, their concerns about risks, reputational risks, non-financial risks, and even commercial risks. And today, it's also the case that not only management is asking for risk management, but also the board, because of new corporate governance principles that require the board to take into account concerns of stakeholders and potential human rights impacts on stakeholders. And therefore, there is a pressure coming definitely from the corporate governance side, just as much as side. And I would say also that for companies that are listing their shares in stock markets, there are shareholders and investors who are asking for companies to demonstrate their human rights performance. Now, it's a little difficult to translate that directly to an entity like ICANN, but the other analogy that I would bring would be organizations, professional organizations like the American Bar Association, the International Bar Association, some stock exchanges, industry associations, also taking up RUGI principles, not because for themselves, but also because of their business relationships and the entities that they sponsor and they promote, because those entities should be aware of the consequences of not applying the guiding principles. So I think a lot of it has to do with defensive measures. And some obviously has to do with PR. But I think what's useful for this discussion to happen, it'll be useful for ICANN to have this discussion to understand exactly what the level of risks are. I think that's really the beginning.
I think that's exactly what everyone needs to hear, what you just laid out. What are the risks? What's the public perception issue? What's the impact on the external customers, et cetera, et cetera? And, but that needs to come up front.
Thank you, Stephanie and Monica. I think that is actually a really great point, and I would like to invite you, but I'm now already stepping ahead a bit to the session tomorrow afternoon, 5 o'clock, where we will discuss how we continue trying to do that. I think it would really help if we would document cases that have been happening in the past, so not only talking about abstract things that happen, but that could really bring it back home. Marilia already has been work mapping. And if we would do a bit more careful analysis, so we're now coming up with a bit of a framework, then we do a draft cases that we properly analyze, and then we can also infer that. So I would really like to invite you, because you already have also great materials and great analysis that you have made, so I would really like to build on that. And
I'm sorry, I just wanted to make one point, but doesn't all these points that you just mentioned, bring us to the fact that actually it is the registries and registrars that are like our bargaining point, because it's them who actually suffer in those contractual relationships. They have to violate the laws. They have to apply for those waivers, which is the biggest tragedy of law, I would say. And they are the people that would have to deal, because they are the data controllers. So this means ICANN itself is in this loop, because it says we're not the data controller, we're not responsible, we don't do anything, so the national data protection authorities cannot even sue it or do anything about it, because it's only the national registries and registrars that are doing those things. So I would say our bargaining point and strategy would be then to actually use it as a main sort of concern, because in those contractual relationships, them who suffer most, I think. No?
Thanks, Monica. So trying to see if there is any...
Pardon me for speaking again. It's Stephanie Perrin for the record. I think that the issue on privacy is pretty clear-cut. The less clear-cut examples, I give you the illicit pharmacies, the registrars are again forced into being enforcers for something that is arguably not within the remit of ICANN. It's really none of their business what goes on a website, right? So that's an example of content enforcement through the contracts. So we should really have a chat with the registrars and come up with a few concrete examples. I mean, privacy ones are dead easy. The other ones are a little more difficult. So we'll try to do that before your meeting. Thanks.
Thank you very much for those comments. Great.
Trying to check if there is any further question or comment. So maybe Nils can run up here, or I mean maybe just to give any additional information about the session tomorrow or your report, if you want.
Yeah, so I got printed copies here available. We'll be presenting in much more detail, and we'll be doing the report in detail during the session tomorrow, so you're very much invited to that. Please also join the mailing list. Your comments, questions are more than welcome, and we'll be looking forward to working on this also ahead of Marrakesh in Workstream 1 in the cross-community. I think that's pretty much it, and I'm also happy to take your question line in real life after this meeting.
Okay, thanks, Nils. So now we will move to the accountability agenda item. We will have our guest coming maybe in 20 minutes. So before that, maybe we can start discussing. And maybe if Robin, our representative in CCWG, can give us short brief about the main issues and I think what's happened lately in Dublin discussion. So,
this is Robin Gross for the record. Thanks, Rafiq. So we've been working pretty fast and furiously on this accountability cross-community working group for the last 10 months or so. And we've evolved our proposal quite a bit. As you may know, we originally started out a few months ago with our first draft proposal, which was for a ICANN to transform into a true membership corporation that would provide specific powers to the members, as in the people. And then in our second draft proposal, that was evolved into what they were calling a sole member model, where all the SOs and ACs together would comprise the sole member in this membership model. And then we would put that out for public comment. And there wasn't a lot of there wasn't a great deal of consensus around that. There was some complaints, some concerns, and then the board, they won't accept a membership model. And so as a result of that, a lot of people in the community are sort of moving to a designator model whereby the SOs and the ACs would be designators, which is really what we are now, except we're not, we don't have our board removal rights. So much less of a shift, but it doesn't provide the same level of power and enforcement to community that the membership model would. So this is still something that is very much up in the air right now. There's a lot of shifting, a lot of pressure. Unfortunately, the board and the staff have really been on sort of this full court press to try to get the community to move back from the membership model and towards this designator model, presumably because it has less power to the community. But we're working very hard to try to patch some of those holes and to see if we can, through perhaps bylaws, provisions, or other types of internal processes and operations, try to create the kind of community empowerment that we need. So that this is an issue that we're going to really be working on all week long here. There are also reforms coming to the independent review process, the IRP as it's called, which is a process by which if you've been materially harmed by a decision of ICANN's or an inaction ICANN's that they should have taken, that you can file a basically an arbitration type of complaint and have that issue adjudicated. It was sort of a sham of a process up until this point, and I think we really are putting some teeth in that process, and it will be a significant accountability tool for the community when we're finished here. We are moving towards ensuring that we have board recall rights. This is something that, in particular, the nominating committee appointed board members have been fighting pretty hard against, but the community is pretty resolved that this is a right that we really want and we're not going to back down from. We've approved the reconsideration request process and made that more accessible and a much more fair process. We're working on some of the transparency issues. Ed Morris has done a nice job of really pushing that issue, particularly the inspection rights, corporate inspection rights, DIDP, although the DIDP will probably be done in work stream 2 of this accountability working group, which means after the transition, the IANA transition. So we've got a lot of balls in the air, so to speak, and moving parts. And despite all the pressure that we've had and the changes that we've made, I still feel like we're going to get there. It's not going to be the timeline that the staff is proposing. I just don't believe it. I remember last year when the timeline that said we would transition this past September 30th, I called it the fantasy timeline, and I think we're still somewhat unrealistic about how much work is yet to be done. And I think coming out of this week, we're going to come up with sort of a new proposal, not entirely new proposal, but a new proposal to go out for public comment. I think that's something that isn't entirely decided yet, as if this proposal would go out for public comment, but I think it must, because there are important changes that are being made. And one of the issues is the inclusion of the human rights language in the bylaws, which is something that we fought for hard in the early part of this process, and now we're just working on getting some of the language refined. Did I forget anything else? Anyone else who's in this process? You want to chime in on some of the other issues or moving parts in the air? I'd like folks to encourage during the public forum this week to make sure that we encourage the board to make sure this proposal goes out for another public comment period, because I think this is just so important of an issue that we really are going to need to hear from the community on the issues. There are important changes that are being made, so I think that's important. A lot of people don't want to go out, and I shouldn't say a lot of people, a couple power don't want it to go out for public comment again, because the rush, it's a rush to get the transition done, but I think that's a mistake. So I think it's important that we make sure that this goes out again, take our time, we do it right, and so we don't, you know, the stakes are too high to a rush job at the last minute, and so we can rush to the IANA transition. Does anyone have any questions on that? I talked for longer than I thought I would. Sorry.
Some questions. So we have first Klaus, and we have a question.
Thank you, Robin. Please. Great putting together.
Klaus.
Okay. I'm getting a little bit schizophrenic because I'm hearing too many things from too many people. So let me bring things together on two points. On the public comment period. Yes, some people say we need it, some people say we don't need it, but what is said most, looks given the political realities in the United States and the Iowa caucus, if we go into a public comment period, we can forget the whole transition anyway. Is that right? Is that wrong? Does that make any sense?
This is Robin. I can give you my view. I don't think that's right. I think that's sort of the FUD, the fear, uncertainty, doubt that we hear from a lot of folks who want us to rush and want us to do it quickly. That's not to say there isn't pressure, but of course there is pressure, but I don't think it is quite as dire as others do. I'm not as afraid of a Republican president, or I'm not as afraid of the big bad ITU coming and taking this away. I think we can weather those storms. It's not to say that it isn't going to be a storm, but I think we can weather. My view, and I know others feel differently, so please chime in.
Okay, thanks, Robin.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. So we will take all the questions, and then you can answer. So first, Mariam, can you read the question from Brendan?
Has ICANN produced a summary report of the comments received on its second proposal? In lieu of this, has CCWG produced such an analysis? I'm concerned that public comments are not getting adequate weight in the process or revising the proposal. That's a question from Brendan.
Thank you. Yes, we have been working on this public comment analysis for the last month. I think the comment period closed August 12th, and then we sort of finished with the individual pieces of that public comment period October 12th, a month later. So we worked on that. And then this week, we've just really been sort of trying to focus on coming up with some consensus. I do agree that unfortunately, the board pressure is taking more predominance than the public comments have, unfortunately. But those of us in the working group are really trying to pay attention to these comments. And in the analysis that we did, we would say, these are the issues. These were the comments that we got back. These are the areas we need to fix. And so we're working on that now. I don't think that our analysis has been all put together in one pack and gone out yet, but it has been done, and that's going to go out in the next few days. And maybe Avery knows a little more. Thanks.
Part of what happens is, this is Avery Doria speaking, part of the first synthesis of all comments and what's commonly called the comment tool has indeed been done, listing all of them, have been working through. But normally the actual thing that gets published is not only the comments and their synthesis, but how we've treated them. And I think we're still in the process of finishing, you know, on dealing with them. So the analysis has been done, and we have been working through the for example, the answers to some of the comments won't really be known until we've actually finished the discussions we're in the middle of. But I totally agree that among the comments, one set of comments have been more equal than all the other comments, and that's the board's comments have been the most equal of the comments we've had.
Thanks, Avery. Yeah, please, can you state your name?
Yes, I'm Shane Burr, and I apologize. I have a lot of questions, and it's probably due to my complete ignorance of this topic. So I guess one question is, there's been a lot of references to resistance to the accountability by the board. Is that a universal, or is it certain segments of the board, or what's the story there?
When you say the proposal by the board, you're talking about the MEM model that they put out?
The rejection of the membership-based organization and the push for a faster deadline and things. I mean, basically, it sounds like the board has a lot of and my question is, it makes it sound like the board is of one mind, and my question is, are they?
I don't think they are quite as of one mind as maybe the chair, when he speaks on behalf of the board, or the CEO speaks, would have you believe. I mean, they claim the board is unanimous against the membership model. But I bet if they actually had were vote, I don't know that if they would be able to get the two-thirds required to reject that. I really don't know. They would also say their concern is for the changing of the corporate structure from a currently a designator model to a membership model. They think that dated, not as lightweight, and I think there might be some argument to that. I'm not sure it's really that much of a change, but a little bit, sure. The most of the resistance we're getting is, I mean, this has been a board that has been entirely without accountability, no checks and balances on what it does. And it's kind of a shocking wake-up call for these that they're actually going to have to start being responsive to the community and follow the wishes of the community who appoints them to these powers. So I think we're going to come out of this a much better ICANN, that's a pretty low bar.
Oh, ouch. I guess another question I have is, you also mentioned resistance to these changes from the ICANN staff as well. And my question is, what role do they have in this decision at all?
Well, it's an open working group in the sense of anyone can show up and anyone can participate. And so we've gotten a lot of participation from the board and from the staff.
Okay.
And the staff legal department in particular has been very active in participating in this. And Body, the CEO, has been made a few performances on this issue in our working groups. Has come up with some suggestions for the group to consider. So the staff has been very active as well. They both have.
And is there time, or do we need?
Yeah, you can ask a
short
question.
Hopefully, a short question. I guess you may have already answered part of this, but you mentioned that there was concern about the timeline because it was viewed as somehow coupled to the transition, right? The NTIA transition. So, and I guess the concern about that is that, I guess I don't understand the concern.
Well, when it was announced that the NTIA would be stepping back, that essentially meant there wasn't going to be any sort of backstop, that the small sliver of accountability, if you will, that we had was the NTIA. And so when they said they were stepping back, that created quite a scare and a concern in the community that we were going to let this organization sort of just go off without any sorts of checks and balances. And so the thought was we needed to reform ICANN's accountability problems before there can be a transition. So, you know, a lot of the people who want the transition to happen really fast say that we, the accountability group, we have to hurry up in order to meet their deadline on when they want to have a transition. That simply isn't true. Transition does not happen until ICANN's accountability problems have been fixed, and it simply can't work any other way. Thanks.
So there is indeed a very strong
link. Very strong connection. It doesn't happen until we're done.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks. So we have, I think, in the queue, Milton and then Aaron. And if someone behind me wants to ask.
Okay, so it's almost so long ago that you might have forgotten what Klaus asked, but essentially the primaries have really little to do with the transition. The point here is that the current U.S. president is not running for re-election, so he can proceed with the transition until and unless it as long as he's in power, and until and unless it becomes such a huge liability that whoever, you know, his successor is in the Democratic Party would plead with him to call it off. And I don't think it's going to be that big of an issue. You know, it's just not comparable to something like, you know, the economy or the Syrian situation. So we really do have until about September 2016, which is when the contract expires. Now, if it goes beyond the U.S. election and we have a new president, then we have a trouble. Even if the U.S. president is sympathetic, there'll be a sort of a hiatus in people responsible being shuffled around. So things have to be in motion before the election is over. I also wanted to respond to Shane's question about the board. Just before we had our meeting here, there was a secret closed meeting of the board, which I stumbled into. I thought I could just come here and sit and wait for our meeting to start. Before I was chased out, I heard them essentially going through how afraid they were of certain provisions. You know, I heard Bruce Tonkin complaining about the IRP and how they didn't know who the judges were. And essentially, I think the people who really are in control of the board or the dominant faction of the board are in a very strong position to essentially, I guess brainwash is maybe not a fair word, but certainly to really get the board all whipped up about all the threats to the organization. So I would just say, you know, it's the most convenient and not terribly inaccurate thing to say is the board and the staff are really pushing against the membership plan and various other forms of accountability. And it's perfectly normal because if any group that's power is going to be limited is going to resist that, and they will think of all kinds of reasons why, some of which may be valid, why they should continue to enjoy the latitude that they have. So we shouldn't be surprised about that, but we certainly shouldn't let that. I think it was tragic the way the CCWG process was hijacked, essentially. Instead of saying the board was just one more public comment and then going through a full public comment analysis and seeing how many people agreed with them, you guys stopped everything, started negotiating directly with the board, and made their ridiculous MEM counterproposal on a par with the models that you had been talking with. Really quite a sight to see.
Thanks, Milton. I thought that maybe Aaron want to make a comment. We go to our... Okay, thanks. So we have our guest coming even before time. That's nice from them. So we have... We have Matthew and Thomas here. So we wanted to... They want to come to our session. They had several CCW sessions with the last days, and they want to hear from us maybe, and maybe some question to NCAG. So want to start. Thomas, Matthew?
Yeah, this is just to say thank you for the invitation. I think that after the engagement session and all the previous communication issued, it might not be necessary for us to do a presentation on where we are. I think you very much know where we are. This is more to solicit your feedback on where we are, how we best proceed, and whether you have questions for us. I was asked to be brief. I think that was brief, wasn't it?
That's surprisingly too brief. Thanks, Thomas. Okay. Yes, James.
James Gannon. When can I have my life back? No, thanks for coming. I suppose for those of us that have spent a long time on this, I think it's important to know that we've made a lot of progress in the last... I suppose 2 days in the last few. Where do you see for those of the people in the room, because we have a number who are new, what do you see the next few weeks and the next few months looking like? Going to be the process now to try and come to a consensus, and what do we think we can do? We're comment period. Do we feel that we may need that? And generally, what's our goal to the end game now?
I might wish to add to the timeline because he is the master of figures. I try to avoid figures by focusing on words. This is why I studied law. I guess my horizon goes far beyond the next few days. I think the meeting tomorrow is going to be the next important step after hearing from the constituents of the community today. I'm not sure whether the agenda for tomorrow's meeting has been circulated yet, but it is our plan to have a first reading on a decision on the enforcement model during tomorrow. We confirm the group's views on the enforcement model on the meeting after, in order to ensure that we can focus on ironing out the last ring, out the details. As you know, I hate this phrase, but something is in the detail, which some call the devil, and we need to make sure that everyone gets on paper what our group has developed. So we need to push certain things over to our lawyers to write it up so that everyone can do a consistency check and see whether all the concerns are addressed. So we need to really wrap up and confirm consensus on as many areas as we possibly can. And you know, once we know how much change we have, we need to discuss whether we need an additional public comment period, whether we think it's just refinements of what we have, that we go without another public comment period. But I think that we really need to listen to the group after we know the level of change, what we best do in order to maintain the legitimacy of the process.
Thomas, and thank you everyone for the invitation. Thank you, Rafik. I think, like Thomas, my horizon is basically days going home after this meeting. That will be already good. But if you look slightly further, I mean, there's one thing certain, the stretch coming for drafting, so volunteers will be once again very much hard work, and that's going to be challenging because obviously Fed is starting to step in, has stepped in for many. And then there's the questions that we'll have to address before we leave Dublin about what the overall time frame looks like. Now, our key priority has always been to have a process that's legitimate, that's building consensus across a very wide community, and at the same time, we don't want to stretch it out for one of the key discussions in the next 2 weeks.
Okay. Oh, sorry. Thanks, Mathieu. We have Aaron and then Milton.
Thank you, Rafik. Aaron Sukumar. Mathieu, Thomas, and Leon in absentia, thank you for all the hours that you've put in on the CCWG. There are others here who appreciate our efforts. My personal assessment of the situation right now, given that we have two somewhat competing models, is that there is now a sense of urgency in getting to the finish line. But so I wanted to put this open-ended question to both of you. What is your biggest concern as of now, as we debate, as we discuss the two models and their specific properties? Because we saw yesterday in the opening meeting that the board offered a statement, started the meeting with a statement suggesting they support the designator model or whatever. And the details of the designator model came much later. You know, we sat down and started comparing the designator model's key features only much later. So it was not really clear as to what the board agreed to in the first place. So given that there is some sense of urgency that is driving the meeting, possibly because of some very real reasons, I just wanted to ask this to you. What would be your big concerns at this stage? Thanks.
I think Thomas and I shot the key concern is to get to a proposal that is a consensus proposal, and that is simple enough to explain so it stands a chance. That's really the overarching concerns. And as you said, there's the model discussion, which is in discussion. We need to close. There are other aspects that we need to make sure we refine correctly so that with definition of a successful outcome of this group.
Yeah, I think we have now in the queue Milton, then Mathieu, Niels, and then Carlos. Milton?
Yeah, so you guys have a lot of work to do. It's a tough job, and I understand your interest in getting it concluded. One point I would like to make is I want to know whether you agree with me that any move away from a membership model would absolutely require a public comment period. That you've essentially shifted the model from the last public comment, and the move is very consequential. All kinds of side deals essentially will have to be made with accountability advocates to make designator acceptable to them. And so we need to think about those side deals. So do you agree with me that it's simply not an option, fail to have a public comment period? And oh, by the way, we talked to Strickling about this morning. He doesn't see any time constraint. I mean, there are time constraints, but he doesn't think that whatever it is, a two-month additional period required to actually digest what has been worked out here would be necessary. So do you agree with that?
This might be a language issue, but can you enlighten me on what side deals are that you are alluding to?
Well, for example, I've heard somebody say, well, if we're not going to get enforcement through the courts, then we have to have more transparency requirements, because then we can know what the board is doing better so that we can arbitrate these issues. It's some kind of trade-off like that, where it wasn't originally part of the designator model, but it would become... You're essentially trying to stretch designator as far as you possibly can, and that requires some creative arrangements. So we need to... Yeah, that's one example of a trade-off that I've heard.
Understood. let me just... go on the review. It's not, you know, not the co-chairs have model. It's the group that has come to the conclusion, or we see a lot of traction for looking into a sole designator model, or at least analyzing further what can be done to make it acceptable for one, i.e. to meet criteria. I think the most important thing for us is to really ensure that we meet CWD criteria, that we meet NTIA criteria, that we meet our group, and then match that against models and see what works and what doesn't work. So I think that you can look at the requirement for public comment in different ways. You look at, let's say, the notion of weighted voting versus consensus. That's something that became very evident from the public comment that has. And I guess that's the main topic or a major improvement of the of the proposal, not inherent in either of the. I think this is an example to say that once we have come to conclusion on the legal info, we need to decide how much of a change that is. And I think that when it comes to comment, we can think of ways to structure our work plan to maybe have a comment period and in parallel submit things to the chartering or make some time. So I think this is something for the group to discuss, and I think it's premature to discuss this or to settle on this day. But I think, you know, let me reiterate what you said. We need to make sure that we have broadest possible buy-in, and we can't... Our group thinks that we need another public consultation, and we should have it, right? So we are certainly not intending to cut...
I have Matthew in the queue. Yeah.
Yes, Matthew Shears. Just going back to a point that I think was raised earlier on by Arun, is that yesterday we spent a very productive session looking at the enforcement, the comparison between the two models, and we spent a lot of time on hour seven on the separation issue. I'm hoping that we will be able to go through the same exercise for the other ones, because that is an enlightening approach and it allows everybody to understand exactly what's essential to knowing where we stand on this. I just wanted to say that I also agree with said that depending on the degree of change, then we will need to go out for come into this on with version two, with all organizations and communities endorsing the single member model, and now we've got, depending again on changes, a very distinctly different kind of model coming out, determine whether we go for public comment. I would be, and I'm sure the rest of us would be very interested in hearing what you're hearing from the other communities you've been talking
about. On your first point, Matthew, something we should definitely, maybe not in details right now. Our impression in the discussion yesterday was that the separation is and also most complex, giving us a very, very good flavor, any difference and issues. We need to bear in mind the core of this discussion is about comparing the two models. So I'm not sure we'll do exactly the same exercise for all of these powers, because I would be probably a little bit duplicating some of the discussions we've had so far. Only if there's any specifics, some differences between the models, then or what we're hearing from the other groups, I think Thomas is well placed to say what's taking place in the GNSO, in ACK or in the CCNSO. There's a lot of interest from the making the last few days. People are encouraged. And I can tell from a CCTLD perspective, although the whole debate hasn't taken place, as well as from the addressing and numbering communities, there is an expectation in the community, and we're working on the basis of consensus, so we need to hear everyone's ear, not about cutting it short, about moving swiftly, efficiently, because there is a nation that, well, we're in the last meeting. That's part of the message out this last few.
I can't claim to have a full picture, but if, for the GNSO, I was in a joint class. They want to look at this more, the decision in those groups. We met RSEC. They asked a couple of questions, but I think they're relatively easy on. GAC is still pending, as you know. They're working on the communique, I guess. And more groups. Leon was with NPOC. I haven't attended that meeting, but we have Rudy here and all that. So I think the groups are forming their views at the moment, but what we sense is sort of what you call a side deal. There is a huge willingness in the community to make models work. Right. Model starts with the D with some patches. That you know, that's what we think are people. And my personal view is that we should just look at it from a requirements basis, see whether we meet requirements. And I think that the discussions that we had, and I think in that sense the discussion we had yesterday was very useful, out that the differences are relatively minute between the two options.
Thanks, Thomas. So we have now Q, Niels, Carlos, Brett, and don't worry. Yes.
Also, thanks for me for the great work you've been doing in chairing this. Always easy process, and you've been doing great. So that's. But this morning, me and some other people, we already noticed some withdrawal symptoms. Very happy you're here. So, that is also making me very worried about the future, because I would like to maintain my habit, you know. So to not only to sustain my habit but also deliver the work we agreed on, I would like to ask you to zoom out and look a bit in the future and maybe philosophize a bit with us about whether there will be a work stream two, and if so, what will it look like? And
yeah, we've don't worry, we can manage this expectation. We have some ideas about it. And actually, it's not only about Workstream 2. There's going to be a Workstream 1 implementation. It's clear in our group that implementing the recommendations of Workstream 1 is going to be an activity in itself and will require close supervision and interaction with our lawyers, who will do part of the drafting, as well, obviously, with as ICANN staff in terms of program management, in terms of, obviously, since there will be advising the ICANN. There's plenty of work ahead for implementation of Workstream 1. There's also plenty of work ahead on Workstream 2, where we'll have to decide how to organize Workstream 2. My personal thoughts are that probably not going to be, we're not going to be able to adopt the same pace and have 60, 70 people working every week in large two-hour conference calls. So we'll need to find the right approach for that. I'm actually more inclined to think that the CWG approach with the design teams and is something that would be interesting for Workstream 2. So we can find a certainly find some areas where volunteers, such as you, can follow up. And I mean, yeah, we'll need some fresh blood.
If your question was also relating to the question of is there Workstream 2 or on the back burner and put them into some sort of use? At the same time, I think when we do the project, everything that's beyond Workstream 1, we need to ensure that we avoid duplication of efforts and inconsistencies between the rethink that, or at least I haven't any pushback on us proceeding with.
Thank you, Niels. My question was basically in the same direction about your vision. So I'm going to limit to two very, very specific questions in the same direction. Thomas, after LA or after the words of Ira Magaziner in LA, he mentioned it should be easy, understandable, and you started an initiative to present a rationale of the whole exercise, which I thought it was wonderful, but then probably it got lost and we went back to the instruments and not to vision. I hope at some point we will get back to that jointly. And in the same sense, I also had the work stream too. This morning I heard, to my big surprise, we're not going to make any change to the structure, you know, like an apology. Would you foresee that in work stream two we could go into details of how the organization work and talk about checks and balances internally, or has been another tacit agreement, not to call it a side negotiation, as Milton said? I would be interested to know when we will have insight into Workstream 2 and internal check and balances and possible reviews of the organizational structure.
Are you alluding to what's been called Plan B in our group? No? I guess
it was the other co-chair who is not present here, and it was actually in the NPOC session.
Okay.
He didn't mention Plan B, but he said we're not going to talk structure in this round.
I guess that we would be well advised to come up with a proposal that everybody thinks delivers on the requirements that we have and operationalize that. That is not to say that there doesn't need to be improvement and revision over time. It's important for us to have something that we think is sufficiently safe and lean on it. Right? And this is what Workstream 1 is about. We need to get to the enhancements that we need, that we deem required for a post-transition era. And I think that nobody has concrete governance changes on the radar, after one, but certainly the organization needs to continue moving and developing. So we will have regular reviews, but I haven't seen anything in our Workstream 2 work that would require us to governance overhaul.
Being considered for Workstream 2 transparency with the review of the transparency of ICANN interactions with government, furthering work on SOAC accountability, probably the most structural, if you want, enhancing diversity, which might be quite significant as well, and the issue of jurisdiction, which is a multi-layered issue, but where probably focus is going to be about jurisdiction for certain. Those are the key areas that are currently considered for work. Stream 2 is not going to be a new, okay, where do we start and what are the issues that have to be solved in ICANN accountability? It's a set of topics that rounds of public comments that we've had. So, and then the rest, I mean, ICANN structure is not set in, cast in stone. Change. Just settle for a couple of years before bringing the new changes. It keeps changing, and the TRD reviews are here for that. Nothing would have prevented the review to come up with the same proposal that we did, leverage to create a realistic option. So maybe that would change in the future, we'll see.
I'm thinking that we can go with the queue, taking all the questions, then you can respond, be more efficient. So we have Brad, then Tatiana, and then James, Milton, and Farzane. So, Brett.
Thank you. One brief comment, one clarification, and then a question. The comment is, I agree that there should be a comment period after this. Just speaking as someone who has not spent their life in the ICANN world, a number of people who would be very interested in the next draft of the CCWG accountability report may not be paying attention to the details during the negotiations and would like to react to the final product in a whole construct. And I think that's very important. I think we got a lot of comments back from the previous draft from people who were not immersed in the process itself, and I think that is something that should be taken into account. The clarification is on the bylaws drafting. Do we have certainty that it's going to be our lawyers who are doing the first draft on the bylaws, or is it going to be Jones Day, or is it going to be the ICANN in-house legal staff? Who is going to be writing the first draft bylaw changes?
So what I say on this question, oh, do you want to take all the questions?
Well, that's not my question, that's my clarification.
A brief one on this. CCWG's position on this is that it's the CC.
And finally, my question, it relates to the sole designator model. Am I correct in under that model that the GAC would have all the authorities and privileges of every other SO and AC in terms of petitions to spill the board, in terms of petitions to block the budget, in terms of all these other powers that we're giving the other SOs and ACs? And if so, I think that that would have to be regarded as a plus-up in the GAC's authority within ICANN, which I think may raise some concerns in terms of NTIA criteria, in terms of rational consideration of the proposal. It certainly raised concern with me. I asked this question of Larry Strickling earlier, and he said that if GAC does indeed have enhanced authority, which we would under this proposal, I understand it's a process, but not nonetheless, it would have powers that it does not currently have, that could indeed pose problems going forward with the transition. So I wanted that to bring to your attention. I wanted to clarify that that is indeed the case, and seek your comment to that.
Very briefly, as you know, our current work product gives all SO the same role in the consensus-based decision-making. When it comes to petitioning for discussing certain community, GAC can today ask the community to discuss certain things, everyone else. They would need to find allies in the ecosystem.
They would be counted as one of the SOs and ACs in terms of whether it could have the threshold necessary to move forward, correct? And that's not the case today?
The GAC, as I understand it today, can ask for community. When it goes to this first objection, they can ask for a pre-call. But in order for the community power to further consider it, they would need an additional group to move that for only the GAC asking for a certain issue to be discussed. Then it would get stopped after the pre-call. I think it's a call for the whole CCWG to take a look at whether that is an issue. And I think so far the CCD has chosen not to give special rights or limit rights or time in for respective groups, because we truly wanted to move away from what's been called by some a concentration of power in some voting organizations to a full community process. But I would encourage you, if you see specific issues with this, let's spell that out and bring it to discuss it.
Oh, Tatiana, please.
Thanks a lot, Tatiana Chopin. We have a record, right? So I want to have this on the record. I'm backing up those comments who support another period of public comments because, I have several reasons to make this point. First of all, I do think that if we are changing the models, whatever close they are to each other, it's serious consequences in terms of enforcement and some other mechanisms. And in addition, I believe there were some other refinements, maybe lots of small refinements, but still they exist, not only the change of the model. Then I think that, the absence of the public comments may cause much more damage than the delay which will be caused by another public comment period, because even if you will have the proposal which will meet all the substantial requirements of the NTIA and so on, there might be some procedural flaws, the process flaws, the legitimacy issues. And thirdly, I want to be clear about this just from my perspective, and I know that from perspective of other people. From the beginning of September, it looked a bit that this process was hijacked and by the comments made by ICANN board. So everything, especially in LA at face-to-face meeting, it looked like many comments were overlooked and the discussion was revolving mostly about changes proposed by board. And it also kind of deprives the legitimacy, but this is just my opinion. So I believe that there should be another public comment period. Thanks.
Can I just say that all comments have been thoroughly analyzed? There's been tremendous volunteer work on that. And we need to give credit to these volunteers for really looking at all this. And as for the board, I think we've had off our differences and we've explained them.
Sorry, I was one of the volunteers participating in the analysis, so I know that all the comments were analyzed. I'm just talking about general impression, you know what I mean? Not really even my impression, just how it looked from the outside.
Just before we move further with you, if there are more comments speaking to the requirement of an additional comment period, I think we've understood the message loud and clearly. That I just want to confirm that NCSG would request a comment period. I think so far NCUC individuals have gone on the record requesting that, but I understand that it's also MPOC. I think that's understood. We'll take that back to the group and just say that you very strongly about the public comment requirement.
Right, because of the reason people are repeating that, it's pretty clear that you didn't want to hear that message.
In the queue. Avri, you can make a quick
question. I wanted to ask a clarification, Avri Doria, on the comment. I believe with everyone else that a comment period needs to come after this. But I'm wondering, does the board intend to have yet another comment period after it's delivered to them? And so what I'm trying to figure out is that, in a sense, there's kind of like two comment periods. One comment period comes if we do one in the CCWG. We get the comments back, and then we have to go back into the comment processing mode. And then there's the kind of comment period where you get a comment, and that helps a board determine whether it's going to attach notes to something or not. So are we planning on both of these comment periods? And that's one of the things I haven't been clear about.
So I encourage you to, I mean, that's something for the board to clarify, but my understanding from this question being raised this morning between the CNSO and the board was that the board indicated that they were planning to consider all the comments and the SOAC endorsements themselves as sufficient to approve. Then there would be obviously one public comment period on the bylaws for when they're finalized, before my understanding of where the process is.
Okay, so no, we have James, then Milton, and then Farzani. Okay, so Milton?
Yeah, you've probably already heard me complain about the units of voting in any of these designator or membership structures, and I just wanted to know that after my comments in the public forum yesterday, a former board member came up to me and said, you know, Milton, you are absolutely right. The board can create an advisory committee anytime it wants, okay? And yeah. And you're making this one of the fundamental units of accountability, and talking about the equality or the inclusiveness of having more of these units in EPATIS. And I think you need to think about the fact that the voting structure could be manipulated by a multiplication of advisory committees in a strategic way. The other interesting detail that Matt actually pointed out to me was that the working under the CWG plan, the working group to initiate a separation process in order to be created requires the approval of the board. So in terms of actually having enforceable separability, this is more of a CWG problem than a CCWG problem, but it's an example of how tenuous the accountability relationship is with respect to the IANA functions operator. So I think that's the main point that needs to be taken into consideration. If we don't have a legal enforceability for IANA separation, we're still concerned about whether we have IANA separability at all. And I did raise that question yesterday about whether a membership structure bind to IANA and not all those other things. I just wondered if there's any follow-up on that.
Milton, 2 points. With respect to new SOs or new ACs being created by the board, so obviously there's a concern that power balance, if you wish, could be manipulated by the board. So I think if we have this specific concern, let's try to address it by either having that we're not getting other results than we've planned for, or fix the bylaw language on that. So I think we're going to take that point back. It's a good point. With respect to the limiting the member rights, the provisional feedback we got from our lawyers might be difficult. As you know, when it comes to statutory powers, that was one of the major concerns that we heard in response to the second, not 100% be sure that membership rights can be limited sufficiently to avoid this destabilization or dissolving of the organization. And so I think if that doesn't work with the current with the membership rights under consideration, then I think it will there will be even less chances if we want to further limit those. You know, at least we won't remove the uncertainty. Our legal counsel says we can limit them by pooling them, right, lower the rhythm of the unwanted statutory powers ever being executed. Jones Day says there is such risk, and the ambiguity or the risk will remain, the uncertainty will remain. And lastly, Milton, you said that this is not an answer that you wanted to hear. Answer the question about public comment. I think we've clarified earlier, I've asked by whom you're addressing when saying you, and you said it's the CCWG. CCWG doesn't want to hear that we don't need another public comment period. I'm not so sure. There are many who want that, and it's not a matter of our personal wishes. We are just trying to navigate the group as per the group's wishes. So we're perfectly okay with trying to find ways to move forward on the basis of having that. And I think Avi has been an excellent one to carefully look at what public comment periods are to come and to ensure that we are synchronizing those in a fashion that we avoid duplication, not only throwing out in terms of losing time, but also not encumbering the community with the burden of being forced to respond to different participating efforts.
So maybe you can get some question and to wrap up. So we have Farzane and Klaus. Yeah, finally.
Thank you, Farzane Badi. So I have one question just to clarify. There was a challenge against the use of the phrase private sector led, that the GAC, not the whole GAC, I think Spain was opposed to it. And did we decide that we are not going to use private sector-led the phrase? I mean, was there any decision on that? I'm not sure. And then there is another question I have, and I don't want to spread the rumors or anything, but I have heard that the board in their comments said that the work stream 2, there should be no work stream 2. Is that something that has been emphasized, or have you discussed?
According to Becky, they've been conducting further work on that. Private sector led will stay in the language.
Regarding workstream two, it's true there was a comment of the board that was could be interpreted as no workstream two. The group has considered how to proceed based on all the comments received. Moving forward with workstream two.
Just a very quick question. Do you have any plans to have another review period? I think one of the most important ones is of the lawyer's incoming bill. Go through these with a fine-tooth comb.
There have been several requests to get more clarity and transparency on the costs involved, so we're working on that. I mean, there are. I think the whole question goes beyond the costs that we are with the CCWG, but there are, I can... costs for their own legal counsel and associated costs. So we plan to gain more information on that and publish that.
What I'm going to say is some of my legal friends consider what has been presented loose, and so maybe it would be a good idea to get some independent... If you need 10 million, spend 10 million. I mean, it's not the amount. I think it's just that we also have a look at...
I can say on the record that the quality is extremely high, number one. And number two, that we need to be aware that part of the bill is because we are very, very bad clients. I mean, consensus building on the questions for the lawyers is not exactly the best way to use your money with lawyers. And number three, part is also related to the difficulty of the
difficult communication between the different legal teams involved, and I'm not speaking of our two legal teams. There are good lawyers, there are co-chairs, and there are also lawyers.
Okay, just to check if there was any question from those. Me? Oh. So, I guess that's it. Thanks, Thomas. Thanks, Matthew, for coming and to have the interaction.
Thanks, you all.
Thanks for having us.
Okay. So, maybe just go for 5 minutes for Zena. Yes, 5 minutes for you. Just to give this kind of brief update about the work with the different volunteers from NCIG.
Arizona BID. Let me first say what DIDP is for the ones that don't know. So it's the Documentary Information Disclosure Policy of ICANN. And according to this policy, you can request ICANN to provide you with documents that are not publicly available. Then ICANN considers your request within 30 days. And then there are some conditions based on which ICANN can reject your request and not make the document public. And these conditions are quite broad, and what we have been we have an ad hoc group on DIDP, and we are discussing the shortcomings of coming up with a plan on how to study this, and then we will share the result and we can work together. One of the problems is that there are 12 conditions that are quite broad, based on which ICANN can reject providing the documents. The other problem is that there's a clause there that says if the public interest in disclosure outweighs the likely harm, the information is supposed to be disclosed. And this is like in our favor because, if they say if the public interest in disclosure outweighs the likely harm. But the problem is that they sometimes invoke this as a reason not to give. So they just say that, the public interest in disclosure does not outweigh the likely harm, so they just don't provide the information. So the ad hoc group, how much time do I have? So the ad hoc group, we have been discussing this at the ad hoc group, and some stated that we might want to compare this policy to other organizations or Information Act for the states. Some also criticized and said that because ICANN is a private corporation, it might not make sense to compare this policy to the State Information Act. And what we are going to do is to look at the appeal process. So what will happen if your request for documents is rejected, what is the appeal process, and then we are going to also look at the history of DIDP and how they came up with this policy. So if anyone has information on that, I would be grateful if you can provide us with that. And then Ed Morris, who is the pioneer of this, I have to say, I should have said this in the beginning, sorry. So Ed Morris is the pioneer of this study of DIDP, and we are carrying out research with Sarah Clayton, me and Ed Morris, about how many, an analysis of the requests for documents in ICANN. The DIDP is good because, just this last sentence, the DIDP is good because then if we have, then we can hold ICANN accountable better if we have the information. And for example, if we can have information about board meetings or other stuff. Thank you.
Maybe if we can get one or two questions, then because we have to move to our guest here already. But if we can get one or two questions, quick one.
Jyoti Pandey for the record. Just what is the timeline that we're looking for the DIDP work, especially work stream 2 context?
We are doing the study, and we are going to come out with the results within 2 weeks. And then also in the working group, we can, well, in the ad hoc group, we can talk about the timelines and what we can do and set the objectives for to feed into the work stream too.
Question, this is Shane Kerr. Is the expectation for changes to this process to apply retroactively to existing documents, or is it to be applied for new documents that are created?
You mean the goal of the study? I mean, how do we want to change things? I think we want to feed into work stream too, right? So we will talk about it there, and also hopefully we will make some changes through talking about, like, giving out the results. What do you mean?
I wrote a document today, for example, with the expectation that there is an existing document disclosure policy, and I would have certain protections about where this document would be published or not. If we revise the policy, do we expect that to apply to current documents? So that's just the question. Sounds like we don't know. That's fine.
Okay. So, okay, let's move to the next item. I think you can keep the discussion. We are this group of volunteers within NCG. They want more about the topics and then to feed what is happening at CCWG, hopefully in the work stream too. So we have with us Alan Grogan. Be sure about your title, the
Chief Contract Compliance.
Compliance Officer. So welcome, Alan, and can you start maybe to make some, give us some update what's happening, because there are several sessions tomorrow, yes. And so on. So.
Yes, so thank you. Thank you for having me. I'll start with some introductory remarks, sort of describing some of the things I've been doing, and then I'm into taking any questions you have. So since I took on this position about a year ago, one of the things that I've been wrestling with is what we can do contractually, what's within the scope of our contractual enforcement power, and also what's within the scope of our mission and remit, what's outside of the scope of our mission and remit and outside of the scope of our contractual enforcement powers, and what role, if any, can we play in areas that are outside that. So, as all of you know, our mission and remit at ICANN is fairly limited and fairly technical. I mean, it's really about coordinating the naming and numbering systems that are interoperable internet. There's nothing in our mission statement or remit that says we're the internet police. There's nothing that says we're responsible for policing content. And as Fadi showed in the slide that he put up during the opening ceremony, if you look at this in terms of layers, our role is largely limited to that logical layer that's part of the infrastructure of the internet. There are people who would like us to take on the role of policing content, policing illegal activity, and policing abuse. I think most of that is outside the scope of our remit, and I don't think we're equipped, knowledgeable, nor do I think we've been delegated authority to undertake those kinds of activities. So if someone is engaged in illegal activity through a website, United States or China or Nigeria or India, a determination of whether they're involved in illegal activity, and if so, what the appropriate remedy is for that illegal activity. Really an activity that's properly undertaken by the courts, because they're the ones who know the law, they're the ones who procedural and substantive due process to assess. ICANN is not knowledgeable about all laws and regulations in every country in the world, nor could we ever be, nor are we set up with procedural and substantive due process to assess facts and make determinations as to. So I think if the appropriate institutions in society do have the responsibilities for undertaking those kinds of activities, make a factual and legal determination that somebody's in legal activity, then our contracts with contracts remedies that would allow us to potentially require them to terminate registrants. But we don't even have direct contractual relationship with the registrants. Aside the question of whether we're a competent authority to make those kinds of determinations, the party that is usually being complained about is not really the registrar or registry, it's the registrant with whom we have no relationship. Having said that, I think there are some serious problems on the internet that need to be addressed, you know, ranging from child abuse images to unlawful activity to copyright, variety of crimes that are perpetrated through websites. And I don't think we can completely absolve ourselves of all kind of societal responsibility for trying to cooperate with other parties in the ecosystem that are trying to address those problems. And it's with that thought in mind that I am convening a session tomorrow. It's at 10 a.m. in Liffey, I think, to talk about how voluntary practices have been adopted in this industry and in other industries to address problems. And voluntary practices really means voluntary practices. So they're not mandated and wouldn't be mandated by ICANN. And typically they come about, it, broadly speaking, I think, in two ways. Some of them are purely voluntary, and the most common one that people in this room are probably familiar with are things like malware blacklists, right? People, ISPs, decide to adopt and use malware blacklists, not because they're legally obligated to, not because anybody has a contract requiring them to, but because they feel it's in their interest and in the interest of their customers to do so. There are other examples that are not purely voluntary, or not purely voluntary in the sense that there isn't any underlying agreement. So, for example, payment processors got together with intellectual property owners, both copyright owners and owners of brands, trademarks, and people who were trying to combat counterfeit goods. And they had extensive negotiations and reached an agreement of some kind. Details of those kinds of agreements often are not made public. But they reached an agreement that results in a number of payment processors agreeing that if complaints are brought by a copyright owner or the owner of a trademark or the owner of goods that are being counterfeited, and the payment processor decides that valid complaint, the payment processor may elect to cease processing payments for that website. As I say, most of the agreements that fall into that category are not made. And I think part of the reason for that is that the payment processors or advertisers is another example who have agreed to do that. Or in the case of pharmaceutical sites that sell pharmaceutical products across borders, yes, have been part of those agreements. I think the agreements are, from what I can tell, relatively loose memoranda of understanding, kind of handshake deals that if you submit these kinds of complaints and convince me that they're valid, I will voluntarily take action. But at the end of the day, it's my decision as the payment processor to take that action or not take that action. It's not something that there's an enforceable contractual obligation that would require me to. So I will have examples from a number of different parties who have been involved in efforts like that. The International Chamber of Commerce has been involved in an effort to combat counterfeiting. I'll have representatives of a couple of different malware spam list kind of providers, a couple of different voluntary outfits that have tried to combat sales of pharmaceuticals by rogue pharmacies. The common thread through all of them is voluntary efforts to address these practices. And my intention in this session is to keep the discussion at the voluntary level, not about mandating or imposing those requirements. Facilitate a dialogue and talk about how we might encourage people to participate in that dialogue or constructively engage with them if there's a role for us to play short of mandating those kinds of solutions.
And then maybe this is now time to get some comments or questions. I think James will be the first.
So I don't think you'll find any group in ICANN more happy to hear you say that ICANN is not the content police than this group. And I think we really need to express our genuine thanks for making such clear statements on this now, because many people around the table who've been here a hell of a lot longer than me have been asking for this for so long. So I'm extremely happy to hear that. However, there is one question that I have. So this has been a grey area for a number of years, and I think there are people on both sides of the argument who may need to be educated on the fact that this is now the official ICANN position. And I'm interested to know, in what way do you plan to communicate this to the people who may have been pushing to do content regulation, how you plan to parties to the reality of the situation as clearly defined?
Thank you. So obviously the blogs were part of an effort to do that, to bring out there in writing and stimulate discussion and debate. I've also been messaging that in head with some of the parties that are submitting complaints, follow-up blogs or other communications.
Yeah, like James, I was happy to hear most of your comments. It was just, I knew at some point you were going to be say, that being said, and then you were going to tell us all the reasons why your position has to be moderated. And yeah, there are these agreements. The payment is a good, payment process is a good example. And that, in fact, is how the intermediary responsibility gets established through this kind of informal pressure. Another example would be the copyright agreement with the ISPs, the five major ISPs in the U.S. So ICANN is under similar kinds of pressure. And I think, to me, the worst example of this was the so-called safeguards that GAC came up with regarding certain kinds of domains. So, in effect, what they were really specifically trying to do was saying, if you've adopted... and it was 200 TLDs. If you've adopted one of these TLDs that we consider to be somehow sensitive, which included things like EAT, we're going to regulate your content. And instead of telling them to go fly a kite, ICANN was pressured into creating, what was it, public interest commitments, those kinds of things. And so it seems to me that we can back your way into all kinds of content relations through these relationships. And another example would be the pressure on you from the IP constituencies to put something in the registration agreement that requires the registrars to effectively monitor for illegal activity. Arguably not content regulation, but definitely intermediary regulation. And the problem with that was that the registrars were not being given a choice to sign this new RIA or not. They was either sign it or go out of business. And, you know, I want to know, what do you think? If you agree with the sort of the general value of trying to keep ICANN above this stuff, which is really good for ICANN and good for healthy regulation of the things we want to regulate, how do we go about it in this environment?
So I think you're right. I think ICANN's under a lot of pressure now, and I think that pressure probably only will increase in the future post-transition with various interest groups trying to get us to do more than is really within the SCAR authority or remit. My view, very clearly, and I think the view of FADI and management, is they out of anything that smacks of regulating content, constitutes legal or illegal activity or abuse. We're really out maintaining the security and stability of this logical layer that allows everybody to communicate with one another over the internet, and the question of what content is communicated or conveyed on websites is not authority. I think in terms of what I will be saying tomorrow at the session on voluntary practices is the way that most of these voluntary practices have been successfully negotiated and either in direct negotiations between the impacted parties, payment processors in a room, and the intellectual property constituents or trademark constituents, and they've negotiated that between themselves. Or sometimes it's been convened, those discussions have been convened or facilitated by a trusted third party. But what I'm going to say in those sessions is I don't even think ICANN should be the third party to convene those discussions. I think if the parties that are impacted feel they need to have a third party intermediary to play some role in facilitating the dialogue or act as a mediator, that's great, but it's somebody outside of ICANN.
Thanks very much, Stephanie Perrin. For the record, I'm really pleased to hear what you just said, that you don't think ICANN should be the mediator, because my question is about really what amounts to anti-competitive behavior. It's good that ICANN is backing away from content regulation, almost necessary, I would say, from a point of view of liability. But if they have any role at all in encouraging what I might be tempted to call collusion between the parties, still sanctioning a breach of process systems that really it shouldn't be in the business of, and it's a slippery slope. So how would you propose to proceed on that basis of disengaging ICANN even from the brokering of these relationships? Can we recall the 2013 RAA by any chance? How would we do that?
I'll take those one at a time. So, I mean, my simple answer is, yeah, I think we need to be very careful to stay out of putting ourselves in the brokering, mediating those kinds of discussions. I really do think they need to be voluntary in the true sense of the word. The impacted parties feel that for valid business or other reasons, it's useful for them to do that. And I think the motivations for companies to enter into those kinds of voluntary arrangements range all over the map. I mean, frankly, in the case of payment processors, one of the reasons that I think they were brought to the table is that it hurt them economically to be processing payments for websites that were engaged in illegal activity because often they didn't really get paid. Right? They're the kind of people who also stiff you on the credit card. So they had a clear economic incentive. I think there are other incentives. Most people in the industry, registries and registrars, respond instantly to takedown requests relating to child abuse images. And part of that is because of the threat of legal liability. Part of that is just there's, I think, almost uniform revulsion and the feeling that they're, you just need to do the right thing. Right? And so if registrars and registries that I know of, if they get a complaint from a legitimate law enforcement source, it's credible and it relates to child abuse imagery, it goes down instantly. Don't even get those kinds of complaints. Spam and malware, again, I think there's a self-interest in doing that because it helps your relationship with the customer to do that, and so there are reasons to voluntarily agree to take those kinds of actions. I think the impacted party should go off and they decide to negotiate voluntary agreements, they should do so, but I don't think that I'd be in the middle of that. I think they really should be voluntary agreements. In terms of revoking the 2013 REA at this point, I'm guessing that was mostly a rhetorical question, but if not, it would be very difficult to do. We obviously have multiple agreements signed. I can't give you the exact number, but it's in the four digits, right? That agreement was the process of a long community discussion and was put out for public comment multiple times. And so if you were to try to amend that agreement, there are very complex provisions in the agreement to amend it. To try to revoke that agreement, I think, would require another policy process with participation by the community to decide to do that.
I'm trying first to see if anyone... No. Okay, we have Wendy and then David. Yes, Wendy.
Thank you very much, Wendy Seltzer. Echoing the what you've been hearing from us, we strongly support giving ICANN's remit limited to the domain string itself. And I just wanted to add that a feature of many of the spam and malware takedowns is that they are functioning on the activity specifically using the domain name and not requiring a site or an ISP. And so they are more directly tied to that. So even for the voluntary agreements, there is a more direct connection.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think there is an argument that some of the issues relating to security, stability of the Internet may be closer to being within our remit. But security, stability of the Internet does that logical layer work, not are there bad things happening in the
Internet. Just a short thing. Are you, this is a question you're talking about intermediary liability issues. Are you aware of the Manila principles on intermediary liability? Because if not, I'd like to bring that to your attention, which is a declaration about intermediary liability issues of all kinds that was produced at just before the RightsCon conference earlier this year. That is a joint statement from a large number of civil society organisations in this area about setting out what we believe the principles for intermediary liability should be. And I think it's a very interesting, it's a very very useful high-level sort of policy guidance document. Would be great to see ICANN consider in when it deals with intermediary liability issues, and perhaps could be a useful thing that you reference if you want a civil society position on intermediary liability without having to, you know, hunt us down and extract one from us. We have a set of principles right there that has a very broad civil society sign on, and I think is a very solid bit of work.
Briefly, I am familiar with the document, and I think that's a good suggestion. Yeah.
Stephanie Perrin, for the record. One additional point that we don't very often hear about with respect to ICANN, and not so much the takedown, but the release of personal information in these things, is that ICANN is a data controller. So that's my point about the 2013 RAA. We have not sufficiently investigated the liability of ICANN as a data controller in having its hands anywhere near the release of the personal information here without due process. So I just want to throw that out there.
I appreciate the observation. We have looked at and we're continuing to look at the EU and other countries relating to data privacy, and a broad cross-functional team at ICANN spending a lot of time on that right now.
Yeah, let's see if there is any further comment or question. So, Anani, did you want to add something? Maybe?
No, I appreciate hearing your support, and hopefully we'll be able to keep ICANN within the scope of its remit and not allow other people to expand beyond that. So,
okay. I see that most of the people start to leave, so maybe we'll try to to finish more earlier. But I think before that, where is Adam? Adam Peake. Yeah, I think Adam Peake wants to say one or two sentences, and I'm going to start the counting.
Good afternoon, Adam Peake, ICANN staff, for the record. We were going to have a brief discussion about the civil society engagement plan for strategy for with all of you, and I don't think there's going to be time for that. What I do want to say is that there is a session Wednesday afternoon at 3 p.m., and before about 1 hour, and we'd very much like to have a discussion with the whole community there. I think the issues going forward are really how do we move some content after this particular meeting. One of the things we're talking about is a newsletter to report on your views of how you feel this Dublin meeting has the issues for civil society have been reflected in the Dublin meeting, what has been important, and we'll see if we can start rolling out some content that would be useful for other organisations, your own outreach. But please come along on Wednesday afternoon at 3 o'clock.
Thanks, Adam. And Adam, we want to add something here?
So I was just going to say, if I mentioned it before, but please join the session tomorrow on voluntary practices too. It's 10 a.m. in Liffey B.
Thanks, Anna. Okay, Maria, you want to say something? And any other business? Yeah. Okay, no. So.
Yes.
Yes, so.
Sorry, I was waiting for, I thought it were coming back to Adam, so I'm sorry. Just a point on any other business. We have an upcoming chair election for the GNSO. And, well, I know that I have the chance to talk informally with the colleagues from NCUC, but not have the chance to interact as NCSG and to hear from the colleagues from NPOC what they feel about the upcoming elections. I know that we are without time to discuss a topic. I just wanted to say that if colleagues from NPOC want to approach me as one of the GNSO councillors and talk about the elections, I'll be more than happy to hear the concerns and the comments that colleagues may have on this topic.
Thanks, Marilia. I think we need to, about the election, to have a discussion within the PC mailing list. Yes, okay. I'm getting too many requests at the same time. Pranish wants to ask something, and then Farzan, and I will try to close this. Yes, Pranish.
This is Pranish Prakash from CIS, for the record. And CIS recently did some research on the mailing list traffic in the run from the main mailing list where IANA transition has been discussed. Well, what we found was that 4 out of 5 people who sent more than 20 mails over the course of the year were actually from the commercial stakeholder group. So on that issue, does the non-commercial stakeholder group have any views or any strategy? Because I think that's an important part, that it's mostly been people from the commercial stakeholder group.
Okay, yes, yeah.
In my opinion, we may talk less, but I find we often talk with more substance.
Okay. That's good. Yes, Farzan.
I forgot to mention that Pat Mini has done a very, Pat Mini sitting there, done a very substantial research on DIDP, and I wanted to say that, but I overlooked my note, and I wanted to thank her, and we will work on that later. Yes, okay.
Okay, thank you. Just checking. Any other business request?
Yes, Wendy.
Wendy Seltzer, briefly. So I noted that the question of content regulation came up in the IPC meeting with the board this morning and with the registries and registrars this afternoon. I wondered if we wanted to say something as NCSG in our meeting with the board tomorrow to echo the fear. Rather, to echo the support for ICANN's expressed position that it is not a content regulator. Remind them that three of the four stakeholder groups in the GNS Council support that position that has...
Yes, I think we can do that. To move from your comment, for tomorrow, the meeting with the board will be at 11:15... And it's at Liffey Hall 1. So see you tomorrow then. Okay, thank you everyone for joining this meeting. I'm sorry that it's 2.5 hours, but we had a lot of interaction and many discussion. Thanks.
Folks, this is also Rafiq's last session as NCSD chair, so big round of applause to him.
Freedom.
Slavery.